The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. If you have any questions or would like to become a sponsor of this program, please contact our office at 919-832-5138. Okay, from the Reader's Digest, The Art of Living. A mother learns to forget the snags and snipes. The journey is as memorable as the destination. The Best Family Vacation Ever by Heidi Stevens. Traveling with the kids is 90% reminding yourself to live in the moment and 10% vowing to never again leave your house. I have an uncanny ability to forget this as soon as we return home from a trip and I've finished washing out our 74 loads of laundry. Guys, did we bring home other people's suitcases too? And we've settled back into the routine and looked through our vacation photos and started feeling nostalgic for the place we just left. Family travel is like childbirth, I suppose. Painful, loud, messy, son of awful, actually, but also spectacular. And you remember only the spectacular until you're back on a plane bound for someplace new and your kids are fighting over who gets the aisle seat while irate passengers bore actual holes in your clothing with their eyes, which is fine because you use the ventilation since you're sweating from shouldering all six carry-ons. Then you remember the bad stuff. Or maybe that's just me. It was me last weekend when my kids and I flew to Texas for my daughter's trampoline and tumbling competition, plus a couple of side trips. We would tour the Dallas Cowboys Stadium. We would visit Waco's Magnolia Market, made famous by HTV's Fixer Upper. We would play outdoor mini-golf in January. We would have nothing to complain about. We were leaving behind school and work for a hotel pool and Texas-shaped waffles and wall-to-wall fun. And yet, we found things to complain about. And by we, I mean two of us. And by two of us, I mean the other two.
The pool was bigger in that other hotel.
That's not how you play, Uno.
Why do you get to shower first? They call this coffee?
That last one may have been me. Luckily, I'd packed my metaphorical coat of armor. I've learned to put it on as soon as we land somewhere, and it forces complaints to bounce off me and land in a pile at my feet. I shrug. I grin. I like the snug, shruggy joy. And for 3 days of genuine fun was had. Frivolous complaints were lodged and ignored, and more genuine fun was had, until it was time to return the car, hop a plane, and fly home. Except our flight was canceled. And so was the flight after that, fog in Chicago. And once that airline resumed flying, there would be no room on any of its flight for another 21 hours. We spent the next couple of hours securing seats for the next evening, tracking down our already checked bags, and finding a hotel room. We hit the hotel pool before bed. We swam well into the night, my kids making up songs and singing and jumping and gasping for air from giggling so hard at their own goofy lyrics and their crazy good fortune to be swimming at 10:30 on a school night. Then that was when it hit me, that family travel is all those things I said before, but it's also a lot more. It's taking your kids to parts of the world that will open their eyes and their minds and finding that actually yours need opening too. It's discovering that things don't have to go right to go well. It's remembering that joy and memories are where you make them, not where you find them. My kids made them at the tail end of a very long day in a tiny pool near a Texas airport. So did I. Three easy ways to add joy to your trip. Leo Babatua at ZenHabits.com specializes in mindfulness training and his pointers for de-stressing daily life are especially helpful when applied to traveling with the extended family. Put space between things. Don't schedule items on your itinerary close together. A vacation isn't a race, and you can leave some breathing room in your schedule. That will help everyone relax, especially if one stop on your tour takes longer than expected. Spend at least 5 minutes each day doing nothing. Just sit in silence. Become aware of your thoughts. Notice the world around you without worrying about moving through it and on to the next thing. One good place is in a chair by a window in a hotel room. Eat slowly. Food can be crammed down your throat, but where's the joy in that? Savor each bite and take the surroundings while you're at it. You'll even eat less. Imagine that, a vacation where you don't gain weight. And now we'll switch to technology. Maybe you don't need your oil changed so soon after all. Car care myths from the family handyman. premium fuel helps performance. Premium gas won't make a difference in any normal vehicle. Only cars built for less combustible fuel need it. Your manual will tell you if premium is required or just recommended, in which case you can skip it and save. I'll get more gas if I fill up in the morning. The temperature of gasoline doesn't change much when the air is cooler, so you aren't saving any money by filling up in the cold. Electric cars are more likely than conventional cars to catch fire. While there has been some concern that the battery in hybrid electric cars might catch fire after a crash, the National Highway Safety Administration issued a report stating these vehicles do not pose a greater risk of fire than gas-powered ones. I have to change the oil every 3,000 miles. You can actually wait a lot longer. Most modern cars can go 7,500 miles or more without fresh oil. Check your car's manual for the proper maintenance schedule. Well, I might as well change my coolant fluid and air filters when I do get my oil changed. The mechanic may recommend you change those while they're at it, but it could be a waste. Again, check your manual. And a quick hint, if you hold your air filter up to the light and you can't see anything, then it needs changing. Driving my tailgate down reduces drag on my truck, making it more fuel efficient. The TV show Mythbusters tested this theory and found that trucks had more drag with the tailgate down than up. To really improve efficiency, replace the tailgate with mesh. Now the subject is money. It is more a measure of your borrowing than of your overall financial health. Why stop worrying about my credit score? If you believed everything you read about your credit score, you'd think that was the most important component of your financial health. Without a good credit score in history, the experts say it's more difficult to qualify a mortgage for a mortgage or a car loan, and more expensive if you're approved for a loan, too, because you won't get the best interest rates. In many states, bad credit can even raise your health insurance premiums, cost you a rental apartment, or make it harder to get hired. While all of that is true, it doesn't tell the whole story. First off, there are several credit scores out there. While it's important to nurture your credit scores by using credit responsibly, your FICO, that's F-I-C-O, FICO credit score may not be the same as what the VantageScore reports, and lenders may use a different one entirely. So obsessing over one score can be a fruitless exercise. More important, as a financial reporter Dave Ramsey notes on his blog, DaveRamsey.com, your credit score is not a measure of your overall financial health. All it tells you is whether you are good at borrowing money and paying it back. That's it, he writes. FICO, the most popular credit scoring agency, uses several weighted factors to determine your credit score, including payment history, 35%, amounts owed, 30%, length of credit history, 15%, new credit, 10%, and credit mix, 10%. Believe it or not, those criteria allow you to be penalized for becoming debt-free. My husband and I enjoyed steady credit scores of about 820 for a while, but when we paid off one of our rental properties in 2017, we both saw our credit scores fall by 20 or more points. The sudden drop took place because we completed a 15-year loan and reduced the average length of our credit history tremendously. In other words, because we paid off and closed a line of credit, our scores took a hit. Now that's a racket if I've ever heard one. I would rather be debt-free than have a perfect credit score. So I do track my score, and new accounts open on creditkarma.com, which is free. But that's mostly just to prevent fraud and identity theft, not to judge my score. Your credit score is certainly important when you're starting out and likely to borrow money for a down payment on a home or some other big purchase. But you're fairly established financially. It's much easier to see it for what it really is, a measure of how well you borrow money. Holly Johnson is an award-winning personal finance writer and author of Zero Down Your Debt. Beware the eternal bad hair day. Make good choices because ghosts are stuck with the haircut they died with. Life well lived. As a man goes blind, his friend watches his back. His Bridge Over Troubled Water by Paul Hond from Columbia Magazine. And there's a picture of two gentlemen sitting on what side of what appears to be a fountain in a city street. Sanford Greenberg left and Art Garfunkel back at Columbia in 2018. And they're both older gentlemen. Both one has completely white hair. The other has gray hair. They're both wearing suit coats, and one gentleman has a blue and white scarf around his neck. And they're both wearing black Oxfords, interestingly enough. One day during his freshman year at Columbia University, Sanford's Sandy Greenberg, class of 1962, stood on campus by a grassy plot with his classmate Arthur Garfunkel. "Sanford, look at that patch of grass. See the colors, the shapes, the way the blades bent?" Garfunkel asked. Greenberg was smitten. Other guys talked about girls and sports, but Garfunkel wanted to talk about a patch of grass? Was there a luckier guy on campus than Greenberg? Here he was, a poor kid from Buffalo, New York, on full scholarship, taking classes from superstars such as anthropologist Margaret Mead, physicist Leon Letterman, historian James Shenton, and poet Mark Van Doren. And he had a great new pal, a brainy kid from New York City with a pure tenor voice. But in the summer of 1960, just before junior year, Greenberg's fortune changed. He was in Buffalo playing baseball when his vision steamed up. He had to lie down on the grass until the clouds went away. The doctor said it was allergic conjunctivitis. Back at school that fall, Greenberg had more episodes, but he didn't tell anyone. He didn't believe it was anything serious. Still, his roommates, Garfunkel and Jerry Speier, saw that he was having trouble. On the first morning of finals, Garfunkel escorted Greenberg to University Gym, where exams were held. Greenberg started writing at 9 a.m. By 10:30, he couldn't see a thing. He lurched to the front of the gym and handed his blue book to the professor. "I can't see," he said. The proctor laughed. I've heard some terrific excuses, he said, "but that's the best." Greenberg went back to Buffalo, where he received another diagnosis, glaucoma. That winter, doctors operated on Greenberg's eyes. The surgery didn't work. Greenberg was going blind. He was so depressed that he refused to see anyone from college. And here's a picture of both Greenberg and Art Garfunkel, and if you recognize that name, that's obviously half of Simon and Garfunkel. But Garfunkel went up to Buffalo anyway. "I don't want to talk," Greenberg said. "Sanford," said Garfunkel, "you must talk." Garfunkel persuaded Greenberg to go back to Columbia and offered to be his reader. In September 1961, Greenberg returned to campus. Garfunkel, Speier, and his friend read textbooks to him, taking time out from their own studies, and Greenberg ended up scoring great A's. Still, he was tentative about getting around alone and relied on his friends to help him. Then one afternoon, Greenberg and Garfunkel went to Midtown Manhattan. When it was time for Greenberg to go back to campus, Garfunkel said he had an appointment and couldn't accompany him. Greenberg panicked. They argued, and Garfunkel walked off, leaving Greenberg alone in Grand Central Terminal. Greenberg, bewildered, stumbled through the rush hour crowd. He took a shuttle train west to Times Square, then transferred to an uptown train. 4 miles later, he got off at the Columbia University stop. At the university gate, someone bumped into them. "Oops, excuse me, sir." Greenberg knew the voice. It was Garfunkel's. Greenberg's first reaction was rage, but the next second he realized what he had just accomplished, and realized, too, who had made it possible. "It was one of the most brilliant strategies," Greenberg said. "Arthur, of course, had been with me the whole way." After graduation, Greenberg got his MBA from Columbia and a PhD from Harvard. He married his girlfriend, Sue, was a White House fellow in the Johnson administration, and went on to become a successful inventor and businessman. Garfunkel went on to become Art Garfunkel. Recently, Greenberg recalled Garfunkel reading him Our Town, which he says was their manual for living. The play's message is that humans caught up in daily concerns fail to appreciate life's beauty and preciousness. "That's all human beings are," says the character Emily Webb Gibbs, a dead woman looking down upon the living and astonished by their folly. Just blind people. Not Greenberg. He sees everything, sings every blessing, great and small, for the love of his family and friends to the dew-dappled groves of a blade of grass. "You are talking," he says today, "to the luckiest man in the world." Very touching. Big Dam Deal. At roughly 2,790 feet long, the world's largest known beaver dam, discovered by satellite imagery in Canada's Wood Buffalo National Park, is more than twice the width of the Hoover Dam. Let's do a little food. Slow cookers and blenders are designed to be easy, but you still need the proper tools and techniques. Error-free ways to use these kitchen appliances. Blender. When your blender stalls every few seconds, there's a reason. The placement of your ingredients. Start with a liquid base or yogurt for a smoothie, then layer ingredients from the smallest to the largest. Keep in ice and other tough pieces at the top. The blaze will run smoothly through the liquid while the hard ingredients get incorporated gradually. Microwave. Container shape is key when it comes to reheating food. The corners of rectangular containers usually attract more energy than other areas, leaving the food in those spots overcooked. A round container, on the other hand, allows the food to reheat more uniformly. And don't add seasoning until you're done nuking the meal. Microwave energy is drawn to salt, so a seasoned top will collect heat and leave the outer layers of your food dry. If you'd rather add salt first, stir it in very thoroughly. Oven broiler. Keeping the door of your oven closed allows the heat and steam to build up, which is ideal for baking, but not for broiling. Venting the steam helps broiled food develop the crustiness you're going for. To escape the hot air also means you'll be cooking mostly on top of the dish rather than baking or over-baking the whole thing. Check your oven's manual first, though. Some ovens are designed for open-door broil, but escaped heat could damage the knobs on others. Slow cooker. Truly trapped heat that cooks the food unabated over several hours is the trick here. Opening the lid lets that heat out and could mean that your dish won't be done when you'd planned. Resist the temptation to take a quick look, or give it a stir until there's less than an hour to go. As long as your pot is between half and three-quarters full, the dish will finish cooking just fine. Dishwasher. There really is a science to stacking. A British study found that the middle racks on the dishwasher, above the rotating arms, get the strongest spray of water. That's best for dishes with starchy stains such as potato remnants, which rely more on the force of water than on chemical detergent to get clean. On the other hand, dishes soiled with protein residue, such as egg, don't need as much force. Keep them at the edges of the rack. The slower spray keeps the soap there longer. Mixer. The beaters in a stand mixer can become misaligned over time. There should be as little space as possible between the beater and the bowl, just enough to reach all the ingredients without hitting and scratching the sides. To fix most units, first locate the adjustment screw on the neck by lifting the head or lowering the bowl, depending on your bottle. Then turn the screw to the left to raise the beater to the right and to the right to lower it. Consult your mixer's manual to find more detailed instructions. Health. Just because a test exists doesn't mean you'd benefit from it. Here's how to tell which ones make sense for you. Four cancer screenings you may or may not need. Breast. The American Cancer Society recommends that women get mammograms every year, but not until age 45. You may need to start screening earlier if you have a family history of breast cancer or genetic mutations that hinder the function of genes, such as BRCA1 and BRCA2, which repair damaged DNA and help suppress tumors. Number 2, colon. You probably don't need a colonoscopy or other colon cancer screening test until you're 50, unless you have a parent, sibling, or child who was diagnosed with colorectal cancer or aeruginous polyps before age 60. Number 3, lung. Unless you smoke or quit less than 15 years ago and you are between the ages of 55 and 80, you likely don't need a lung cancer screening. Prostate. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force advises men 70 and older to skip the prostate-specific antigen PSA test entirely. But men ages 55 to 69 should decide for themselves. Prostate cancer is slow-growing, and treatment can severely affect quality of life. But if you are African-American or if you have a father, brother, or son who had prostate cancer before age 65, discuss screening with your doctor starting at age 45. And news from the world of medicine. Teaching mosquitoes to leave you alone. Forget your insect repellent while out for a hike. Just wave your arms. A study published in Current Biology reports that mosquitoes dislike air vibrations, such as those you create when you move. And when vibrations are combined with your unique odor, mosquitoes associate them with your odor and steer clear. Grilled or broiled meats may raise blood pressure. In a study of more than 100,000 men and women, researchers found that participants who ate grilled, broiled, or roasted beef, chicken, or fish at least 15 times a month were 17% more likely to develop high blood pressure than those who consumed those foods fewer than 4 times per month. The likely cause, potentially harmful compounds produced when meats are cooked at very high temperatures or over an open flame. Doctor loyalty pays off. In a 2-year study of more than 230,000 patients aged 62 to 82, Those that had the highest level of continuity of care, meaning they usually saw the same doctor, had 12% fewer hospitalizations for preventable conditions such as asthma and pneumonia than those with the lowest level. Other factors of continuity of care include having a good relationship with your doctor and having your doctor share information with any specialist you see. Exercising for 1 hour may cut depression risk. A study found that nearly 34,000 healthy adults in Norway found that those who didn't exercise were 44% more likely to become depressed, compared with those who exercised 1 or 2 hours a week. And they didn't need to do vigorous workout, just walking at a moderate pace was enough. Inability to identify odors might signify dementia. In a recent study, nearly 3,000 adults aged 57 to 85 were asked to identify 5 common odors. 1% of the subjects were not able to identify any of the smells. 5 years later, almost all of those participants had been diagnosed with dementia. In another study of nearly 300 people whose parents or siblings had dementia, those with the most difficulty in identifying odors also had higher levels of tau and beta amyloid proteins, both biomarkers of Alzheimer's disease. If you find that your sense of smell is no longer as sharp as it used to be, ask your doctor to evaluate you for Alzheimer's disease. Avoiding unnecessarily biopsy. If your doctor suspects you may have prostate cancer, ask about a targeted diagnostic exam called multiparametric MRI. A needle biopsy, the most commonly used diagnostic procedure, tests only random tissue samples and can cause bleeding, pain, and infection. The MRI can cover the entire gland, making it easier to spot malignancies and determine their size and density. A biopsy may still be needed if the findings are suspicious, but using an MRI first could reduce unnecessary biopsies by 27% and detect up to 18% more advanced cases of cancer, says a study in The Lancet. Now for something a little brighter, how about all in a day's work? Enter in a doctor's office, there's a gentleman sitting on the exam table, and the doctor's looking at him with a worried look on his face and says, "It's really serious. I can't find any TED Talks about what you have." Thinking no one could hear me as I loaded a UPS tractor trailer, I began to whistle. I was really getting into it when a co-worker in the next trailer poked his head in and, "You know, I always used to wish I could whistle," he said. "Now I wish you could." When I was a proofreader, I shared with my coworkers this example to illustrate how writing can skew based on gender. A professor wrote on the blackboard, "Woman without her man is nothing." The students were left to instruct the proper punctuation. The men wrote, "Woman without her man, women, comma, without her man, comma, is nothing." The women wrote, "Woman, exclamation point, without her, comma, man is nothing." That kind of works better when you can see it. Scene, a sports store. Customer, "Do you have jogging shorts?" "We have running shorts. How fast were you planning on going?" I used to teach preschoolers at a daycare. Recently, I was in my college gym when some guys ran through the weight room and tripped. Instead of an offer to help, the daycare teacher and me came out and admonished, "This is why we use our walking feet." Scene, a public pool. I'm testing the chlorine and pH level of the water when a woman approaches. Woman, "Is the chlorine all right? Is it safe to come in?" Me, "Absolutely." Woman, "Because last time we came here, when we went home, our skin was dark." Me, "Oh, the chlorine wouldn't do that to your skin." Woman, "No? Then what would?" Me, "The sun." A customer walked into my clothing shop and asked to see the pants that were advertised in the paper that day. "We don't have an ad in the paper that day," I told her. She insisted I was wrong, so I got a copy of the paper, and we went through it, eventually landing on an ad for pants from another local store. Exasperated, the customer glared at me and said, "In my newspaper, the ad was for this store." Come again? Hospital patients are understandably distracted, which might explain these odd statements heard by nurses. Patient, when asked about her chief complaints, "Well, my hair hurts." There was a little hard pellet inside my mouth, and I think, maybe it was my ovary? I didn't actually fall. It was controlled landing. "Oh, I'm just so constipated. Please bring me some eye drops." Patient with seizures. "I had to come to the ER because I quit talking my peanut butter ball." He meant phenobarbital. "My father had thyroids. I think I do, too." Suggestions about life are a little like lottery tickets. You may collect a lot of them, but they rarely pay off. Yet if you are truly lucky, you receive a few words of wisdom that inspire you forever. That's called hitting the jackpot. The best advice I ever got. Well, as soon as I can get my computer to go here, I'll read it to you. Okay, here we go. Sorry about that. Had a little computer difficulty there. Zip up your go-go boots and smile. And there's a picture of a pole with different signs on it. Love, poise, friends, heart, work, courage. I grew up in a small town in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains, Anniston, Alabama. Much of the town worked at the cotton mill, the Fort McClellan Army Base, or the Monsanto Chemical Plant. The town stank like rotten eggs. It was a poor town when the girls got married at 14. They were usually pregnant by 15. My mama had 5 kids by the age of 22, and 6 of her 8 husbands came from Fort McClellan. My siblings and I grew up in a housing project. At school, we had to eat less because we were the welfare kids. By the time I was 8 years old, I was cleaning houses and babysitting. But you know, I didn't mind. I felt safer working than being at home with mama and all those strange men coming and going all the time. When I turned 12 years old, I got my dream job, working the concession at the movie theater. I got a chance to see how people outside the projects behaved and how they dressed. One day, the tallest woman I ever seen walked in. She had on a big pink hat, and she was wearing a pink dress. She was carrying a pink pocketbook and wearing white gloves. She walked up to the counter and said, "I'll have a large popcorn, a large RC Cola, and a large Hershey bar with almonds." I thought, she must be rich. Nobody orders large. She looked at me and said, "What's your name?" And I said, "Tricia Mitchell." She said, "How old are you?" And I'm thinking, why is she asking me all these questions? I answered, 12. She said, "How tall are you, honey?" And I said, "I don't know, ma'am." And she said, "Well, stand against that RC Cola machine. I'm going to measure your height." She pulls out a pink measuring tape. She said, "Oh, my, you are tall for your age." And she opened up her bag and gives me a pink card. She said, "I am Olma Marcy Harwell. I'm in Miss Marcy's charm school down on 10th and Noble. Have your mama call me." Well, after work, I'm clutching that pink card, and I run home. Mom was sitting at the kitchen table, painting her fingernails red and drinking a glass of gin. I go, "Look, Mama, Miss Marcy wants me to come to her charm school." Mama looks at the school and says, "You ain't going down there. It's a whorehouse." She throws the card down to the floor. Now I'm really confused, but I knew I had to do something. So when Mama wasn't looking, I picked up that card and I went to a neighbor's and I called Miss Marcy and told her Mama wouldn't let me come to her school. Miss Marcy said, "Don't you worry about that, honey. I'll handle it." Now, Miss Marcy knew a little bit about my family because her husband was the town judge, and he had sentenced one of my stepfathers to prison a couple times. So Miss Macy told Mama I could come to her school free, and I might even be in the newspaper one day, and that could make Mama real important. Mama let me go. After work, Miss Macy would teach me how to walk up and down the stairs like a lady. She taught me how to sit properly in a chair and even how to exit a room. She encouraged me to enter every beauty contest that came to Alabama, like Miss Talladega 500 Raceway. Some of them I won, including Miss Cotton Crop and Miss Escalator. But it was the first escalator the town had ever seen. One day at the charm school, she's waving this glamour magazine above her head. She said, "We are going to a modeling competition at the Waldorf Astoria in New York City." Now, I didn't know whether to start crying or get excited. I never thought in a million years I'd go to New York City. The trip was expensive, but I had a year, so I started working 3 jobs. One day, I'm walking down the street, and this little old lady comes up to me and says, "Honey, I just got my welfare check, but I'm going to give you $5 to help you leave to go up north." I said, "Ma'am, how'd you know I needed my money?" And she said, "Well, Miss Macy went on the radio this morning and told the whole town that we've got to help you leave." And the town did help. J.C. Penney gave me a Madras miniskirt with a matching jacket. The shoe department gave me a pair of white patent leather go-go boots. The jewelry store gave me an alarm clock. And the beauty parlor frosted my hair. I walked in a brunette and I walked out a striped platinum blonde. They even peroxided my eyebrows. A few days before leaving to go to New York, an envelope arrived at the charm school with my name on it. Inside was $2,000 and a note that read, "I went to help you leave to become successful." I still don't know who sent it. In May of 1971, I was 18 years old. Miss Macy and I boarded the train for New York City with a bottle of Drambuie and a brown paper bag filled with Southern Fried Chicken. 30 hours later, we walked into the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. When the competition started, I was immediately intimidated. I thought for sure I did not belong there with my striped hair and my white go-go boots. And I didn't see one girl walk on the runway the way Miss Macy had taught me, by tilting and tucking and keeping her chin up. They're walking all fancy-fied and flipping their hair over their shoulders. I pretended to be confident, but I was really scared people were going to find out who I really was, this poor white girl from the projects. But Miss Macy, she never stopped encouraging me. When it was my turn to walk the runway, she said, "You get on out there. These judges need to know how we show clothes in Alabama." The competition was judged by two top model agents, Wilhelmina and Ford, and by the editors of Glamour and Mademoiselle. And when it was over, I didn't win anything. And Miss Macy, oh, she was just fit to be tied. It's a Sunday afternoon, and we were going back to Alabama the next day. Miss Macy's frantically pacing our hotel room, drinking Drambuie. She said, "I am not prepared to take you back to Alabama tomorrow. There is nothing there for you." She picked up the telephone and called the Birmingham newspaper. She told him I had just been signed with the world's most famous model agency. When she hung up, I couldn't believe it. Miss Macy, that ain't true. When I look back on that, I realize that Miss Macy had a far better understanding of how destitute my life was in Alabama, and she just kind of ignored my protesting and ordered me to get dressed. We were going to go down to the bar in the hotel lobby. I put on my Madras miniskirt and my go-go boots, and she puts on her big hat and her white gloves. Right when I'm reaching for the door, she picks up the telephone and calls Governor George Wallace. "George, this is Alma Macy Hallwell calling you from the Waldorf Astoria, New York City. Our Alabama girl, she just got signed with the world's most famous model agency. That's right, Governor. We're putting Alabama on the map." Well, at that point, I just grabbed that ball of Drambuie and I am chugging it. Miss Macy grabbed my arm, and we head down to the Palm Bar. We walk in, and there sat Wilhelmina in an entourage of people and a swirl of cigarette smoke. Miss Macy walks right up to her. I hide behind a palm tree. Miss Macy says, "Wilhelmina, I am Alma Macy Harwell from Anniston, Alabama, and I have a young lady with me that I am not prepared to take back to Alabama tomorrow. She is staying in New York City and becoming a model with your agency." I didn't know whether Wilhelmina was going to burst out laughing or, applaud Miss Macy. So Wilhelmina said, "Well, where is she?" Miss Macy snapped her fingers, and I am swearing so much behind that palm tree that my white patent leather go-go boots are all stuck together. I'm sweating so much behind that palm tree that my white patent leather go-go boots are all stuck together. When I manage to upstick them, I go stand next to Miss Macy, and Wilhelmina says, "Well, do you have a name?" I go, "Yes, ma'am. My name's Tricia Mitchell." She says, "So tell me, Tricia Mitchell, what's so special about you? Why would I want to hire you as one of my models?" God, my heart was pounding at that moment. I didn't know the right thing to say, but this one word popped into my head. It was a word that Miss Macy had always told me about myself. And I said, "Determination, ma'am." She said, "Well, why don't you and Miss Macy come to my office tomorrow morning?" The next day, Wilhelmina handed me a contract. She said, "I'd like to see what you can do with that determination. But first, we have to do something about your hair." This article was by Tricia Coburn, who apparently became a quite famous model. Advice. The greatest bit of advice I ever received was, "Don't worry. No one else knows what they're doing either." Ricky Gervais. Today is the youngest you will ever be. Live like it. Mark Cuban. A little editorial here. Just out of curiosity, I just Googled Tricia Coburn. Tricia Coburn was a tall, gorgeous brunette. No wonder they wanted to change her hair back. She's a beautiful woman. Okay, let's switch over to Consumer Reports. And because we've been talking about road trips, we're going to shop smarter for sunscreen. If you're still confused about whether SPF is meaningful, broad spectrum matters, or natural formulations work at all, CR's expertise will lead you to the best choices. Plus, heed our advice about how much sunscreen you need to apply and how often, even if you're nowhere near a beach. And whether you have fair or dark skin, you hit the beach every day or only on vacation, if you're 16 or 60, You need to use sunscreen. You'll be in the sun for longer than a few minutes. But with bottles and tubes covered with claims, it's really hard to make sense of what all the terminology means, says Rupal V. Kendu, M.D., an associate professor of dermatology at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine, who researched how people buy and use sunscreen. Here, then, is the help you need. 7 common terms and what they actually mean and don't. The federal government requires sunscreen claims to be truthful and not misleading, but only 3 of the main claims consumers see, SPF, broad spectrum, and water resistant, are strictly regulated by the government, and therefore have agreed upon definitions. So explore our ratings of 73 lotion sprays and sticks based on our scientific testing to make sure you're less likely to get burned at the checkout counter or on the beach. SPF. Government regulated, yes. SPF, or sun protection factor, is a measure of how well a sunscreen guards against all ultraviolet B, UVB rays, the chief cause of sunburn and a contributor to skin cancer. You might think that an SPF 30, for example, is twice as protective as an SPF 15, but the SPF 15 shields you from 93% of UVB rays and 30 blocks 97%. That's still a good reason to choose the sunscreen with the higher SPF. Consumer Reports testing, which differs slightly from the test the Food and Drug Administration requires sunscreen manufacturers to do, has found that many sunscreens don't meet the SPF level printed on the package. So if you can't find one of the higher scoring sunscreens in our ratings, we found that your best chance of getting a product with at least an SPF 30, the minimum our experts recommend, is by choosing a sunscreen, a chemical one, not mineral, labeled SPF 40 or higher. Broad spectrum. Government regulated. Yes. Products with this label protect against ultraviolet, UVA, UVA, and UVB rays. UVA rays penetrate more deeply into the skin layers than UVB and can cause damage that can lead to skin aging and, as with UVB, skin cancer. But while it's easy to tell how well a broad spectrum sunscreen protects against UVB rays, just check its SPF. You can't tell how well it protects against UVA rays. The FDA required broad spectrum test is pass/fail, so a sunscreen providing stellar UVA coverage can be labeled broad spectrum the same way one just barely skating by can, and there's no way to know the difference. That's why I designed our test to show which sunscreens provide additional UVA protection beyond the minimum required. Very water resistant. Government regulated? Yes. The FDA requires water-resistant and very water-resistant sunscreens to maintain their SPF levels for 40 or 80 minutes of sweating or swimming, respectively. You won't see a product sporting a waterproof claim. The FDA doesn't allow it because there's no such thing. The minute you jump into a pool or begin to sweat, says Kundu, sunscreen starts to run off your skin. That's why even water-resistant products need to be applied as soon as you come out of the water. Does sunscreen expire? It's time to head to the pool, but only the sunscreen you can find is the half-used tube at the bottom of last summer's beach tote. Will it still protect you? Maybe. Sunscreen is formulated to remain effective for at least 3 years, according to the Food and Drug Administration regulations, but not forever. Check the expiration date on a container and toss if it has passed. If there's no date on the tube and you weren't remember when you bought it, play it safe and buy a new one. Write the purchase date on the new container with a permanent marker. Remember, too, that even with a new bottle of sunscreen, heat can accelerate its breakdown. So avoid storing it in places where the temperature can spike, such as in your car. The FDA also recommends that you keep sunscreen out of direct sunlight by swaddling it in a towel or stashing it in the shade or even a cooler when you carry it on your outings. Sport. Government regulated? No. This is more terminology. This means that the product probably works like a water-resistant or very water-resistant sunscreen. But check the label to make sure one of those terms is on the package, too. If not, you can't be sure you'll be protected when you sweat or swim. Dermatologist recommended. Government regulated? No. Just because a sunscreen is stamped with this claim or doctor tested doesn't make the product superior to one without it. Recommended may mean that at some point a clinician was consulted, he says. As for the tested claim, you have no way of knowing what the product was tested for or how extensive the testing was. Because manufacturers aren't required to adhere to a strict definition for these terms, it's impossible to know whether or not any of the claims are meaningful. Natural or mineral? Government regulated? No. There are no standards for these terms, but they're commonly used for sunscreens that contain the minerals titanium oxide, zinc oxide, or both, as active ingredients. These so-called physical sunscreen products protect against UV rays by deflecting them, while chemical sunscreens, such as avobenzone, absorb UV light. Just because a sunscreen has mineral ingredients doesn't mean it's better for you than a chemical one. Titanium dioxide and zinc oxide, for example, aren't just plucked from the earth and plopped onto your sunscreen. They're processed and refined, too. Dermatologists often recommend titanium and zinc formulas for children and people with sensitive skin. However, in the past 6 years of sunscreen testing, we haven't found a mineral product that offers both top-notch UVA and UVB protection and meets its label SPF, says Susan Booth, the project leader for our sunscreen testing. If you still want a mineral sunscreen, we suggest California Kids Super Sensitive Lotion SPF 30+, or Badger Active Unscented Cream SPF 30. Both received an overall score of 55, good, in our ratings, with California Kids providing better UVB protection than Badger, and Badger providing better UVA protection than California Kids. Reef Safe, government regulated. Some of the ingredients in sunscreens can damage delicate coral reef systems, which in turn can affect the health of the oceans. Up to 6,000 tons of sunscreens are estimated to wash into the coral reefs around the globe each year. But you can't be sure you're making an environmental-friendly choice by using a sunscreen labeled ReefSafe. Sunscreen manufacturers aren't required to test and demonstrate that such products won't harm aquatic life, says Craig A. Downs, Ph.D., executive director of the Heraclitus Environmental Laboratory, a nonprofit scientific research organization. And research supports the evidence that oxybenzone, a commonly used chemical sunscreen ingredient, contributes to coral bleaching, a condition that leaves coral vulnerable to infection and prevents it from getting the nutrients it needs to survive. As a result, Hawaii has banned the sale of sunscreens with oxybenzone beginning in 2021, and some retailers, such as REI, are implementing policies against carrying products that contain it. But oxybenzone isn't the only damaging ingredient. There are 11 chemicals that we know from the scientific literature that pose an environmental threat, says Downs. If you plan to go into the water at the beach, a better environmental bet may be to cover most of your body with UPF, ultraviolet protection factor, clothing, or even just a plain old T-shirt, which previous CR testing has found to offer excellent protection. You still have to apply sunscreen to exposed skin, but you need far less, up to half the amount, Downs says, than you would if you were in a bathing suit. From an environmental perspective, he says, that's a massive victory. Mineral sunscreens with zinc oxide or titanium dioxide appear to be safer for coral reefs than chemical ones, according to the National Park Service. But mineral sunscreens generally aren't highly rated by CR for screening out harmful UV light. The two mineral sunscreens listed in the previous section fared well in our tests. Another option is to use an oxybenzone-free chemical sunscreen. The two highest scoring of these sunscreens in each category in our test were Well at Walgreens Moisturizing Lotion SPF 50, number 12 in lotions, and Hawaiian Tropic Island Sport Ultralight Spray SPF 30, number 10 in sprays. Better protection for a lower price. Super sun protection doesn't have to come with a hefty price tag. We paired products with similar claims to show that you can actually get a higher scoring product for less money. Cheaper. Trader Joe's SPF 50+. Got an overall score of $100, dollar per ounce, $6 for 6 ounce thick container. Pricier, Banana Boat Sun Cut Comfort Clear Ultra Mist Spray, SPF 50+, scored a 96, but it's $1.93 per ounce. And those are our two highest ranked sprays are among the lowest cost. That's interesting. Hawaiian Tropic, this is cheaper, Hawaiian Tropic Silk Hydration Weightless SPF 30, overall score of 69, which is good. $2.06 per ounce, $10.50 for 5.1 ounces. $5.80 per ounce for the Kiehl's Activated Sun Protection Water Light Lotion SPF 30. Got an overall score of 65. These two are well matched, but the Hawaiian Tropic is about one-third the price per ounce. And Equate Malmart Sport Lotion SPF 50, quarter 99, is 63 inches per ounce, and it's $5 per 8-ounce bottle. Versus Coppertone Sport SPF 50 lotion at $1.14 per ounce, $8 for 7 ounces. The Walmart got a 99, the Coppertone got a 68. Equate ranks second overall in our lotion rations and one of the most affordable. Sunscreens you'll want to wear. Sunscreen can be sticky and greasy and leave you looking pasty or smelling like you crashed into a vat of Tropicana-themed cocktail mix. But there are also products that feel great and smell good, too. Fragrance-free, La Roche-Posay Antihilo 60 Melt-In Sunscreen Milk. $7.20 per ounce. That's expensive. Scored 100. Our top-rated lotion is fragrance-free, although it does have a very slight plasticky smell. It's lightweight and absorbs quickly. Non-greasy, CVS Health Beach Guard Clear Spray SPF 50 at $1.54 per ounce, scored a 90, leaves just a trace of film on your skin. It smells floral and fruity. The nozzle sprays in a wide pattern, allowing for easy and quick coverage. Also, the Aveeno Protect Hydrate Lotion SPF 30, $2.67 per ounce, with an 82 score, sheer with light, fruity aroma. Best beachy or tropical scent. Trader Joe's Spray SPF 50 Plus at $1 per ounce, scored 100, has a very slight classic beachy aroma, a combination of floral and citrus, leaves an oily sheen on the skin. Banana Boat Sun Comfort Clear Ultra Mist Spray SPF 50, $1.33 per ounce, scored 96, slight pina colada scent and a barely there feel. And won't irritate the eyes. Up and Up Target Kid Sunscreen Stick SPF 65, $6.67 per ounce, scored 84. Sunscreen sticks are less likely to run because they're waxy consistency. This one has a plate plasticky scent and slightly tacky, waxy texture. Apply it the right way. Put on sunscreen 15 minutes before you go out so that it's absorbed by your skin before the UV rays hit you. Use about an ounce, an amount that should fill your entire palm, to cover your swimsuit-clad body from head to toe. Be sure to also cover your ears, upper back, and the back of your hands, and the top of your feet. These are spots people commonly miss, and swipe on a lip balm with an SPF. Reapply every 2 hours or after swimming or sweating. Okay, I'm going to read the top 7 lotions that they recommend. The most expensive is the one I mentioned before, the La Roche-Posay. That's at $36. That's number 1. Scores 100. Equate scores 99. That's at 50. That's from Walmart. Bullfrog Land Sport Quick Gel is at 95. That's $8.50 per ounce. And the Coppertone Water Babies SPF 50 scored 95. That's $9 per ounce, or $9 for the bottle per ounce. I'm sorry, it's $1.13 per ounce. The Coppertone Lifeguard Ultra Guard SPF 70 lotion scored a 94. That's $1.25 per ounce. Equate, once again from Walmart, Ultra Protection Lotion SPF 50 scored 92. That's 47 cents an ounce. And Aveeno product and Hydrate Lather scored an 82 and $2.67 per ounce. And here's the top 5 sprays. Trader Joe's Spray SPF 50 Plus scored $100 per ounce. Banana Boat Sun Comfort Clear Ultra Mist Spray SPF 50 scored a 96, $1.33 per ounce. CVS Health Beach Guard Clear Spray SPF 70 scored a 90, and that's $1.54 an ounce. Equate Walmart Sport Continuous Spray SPF 30, 83, and at 83 cents an ounce. That's interesting. Neutrogena Beach Deluxe Water and Sun Protection Spray SPF 70 scored an 82, it's $1.92 per ounce. And they openly have a strong recommendation on one stick and lip balm. Up and Up Target Kids Sunscreen scored at 84, and that's $6.67 per ounce. I'm going to start this next article, but I don't think I'll be able to finish it. It's too long, but it's pretty important, so we'll start it now, and then I'll finish it next week. Heart Surgery Safety Guide. Every year, hundreds of thousands of Americans undergo heart surgery. Though these operations are becoming safer, when something goes wrong, it can be catastrophic. Follow these strategies and use our hospital readies to make the best, most informed choices for you and your loved ones. Life-saving surgery. Doctors replace a faulty heart valve at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. There's a picture of surgeons doing their thing. It's one of only 18 hospitals in the U.S. that earn top ratings in both valve replacement and bypass surgery. The actor Bill Paxton entered Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles last February for surgery to fix a faulty heart valve and a bulge in a major artery. But after 11 days, Paxton, then 61, died. Now in a lawsuit against the surgeon and the hospital, his family alleges that his death stemmed not from underlying heart problems, but from complications linked to the procedure meant to correct them. The lawsuit also claims that surgery wasn't necessary and that the surgeon used a maverick technique, failed to disclose potential risk, and left the operating room too soon, leading to delays in treating those complications. A spokesperson from Cedars-Sinai said it could not comment on Paxton's case due to patient privacy. While only a small percentage of heart surgery patients died during the operations, all put their lives in the hands of the surgeon and the hospital. Indeed, as Paxton lawyers write in the lawsuit, there's a power imbalance between doctors who are learned, skilled, and experienced in medical procedures and conditions, and patients and their families who know little or nothing about the operation. With our guide for heart surgery patients, you can begin to right that imbalance. To learn when to ask the hard questions, what to anticipate, and what to guard against. And you can use our ratings, which start on page 56, to choose a hospital with a proven record of success. Knowledge is powerful. Open heart surgery is no small matter. Surgeon offers saw through the breastbone to open the chest, connect the patient to a heart-lung machine, stop the heart, then repair it. Despite the complexity, doctors performed more than 200,000 such procedures in the U.S. in 2015. And you're listening to a person who has actually been through that. I had a triple bypass about 6 years ago. Very successful, thank goodness. For experienced surgeons, the procedures can sometimes seem almost routine. But for patients and their families, the prospect of heart surgery can be very scary. When Sharon Greenberg, an attorney in Chicago, learned that he needed a heart valve replaced, she decided to face the fear head-on. She learned as much as she could about the procedure, researching it extensively and peppering her surgeon with questions. All that helped calm her nerves. "I was much better off knowing what was in store for me than worrying about what could happen," Greenberg says. Insist on an open exchange. When you're considering heart surgery, nothing about the operation should be a mystery. The biggest fear patients have is of the unknown, says Suzanne Fredericks, Ph.D., graduate program director of the School of Nursing at Ryerson University in Toronto, which has conducted extensive research on cardiac care. And I'm going to insert a little something here. When I had my heart surgery, my heart surgeon at Duke was so open explaining everything that was going to happen, what the options were, what could happen if something went wrong. I won't say it was pleasant, because having your chest cut open is not fun. On the other hand, it was a very learned, good experience. So you need to know that if you're dealing with a doctor, be sure you trust that doctor. At her hospital, patients can see where they have surgery and where they will recover and connect with former patients, she says. Doctors should also discuss the potential benefits of the surgery, but be honest about the risk too, so patients can make fully informed decisions. The Society of Thoracic Surgeons, STS, the main professional group that represents heart surgeons, provided consumer reports with the data used in our heart hospital ratings and has a risk calculator at riskcalc.sts.org. Use it with your doctor's self and ask him or her to carefully review the results with you. From her research, Greenberg was prepared to face the post-op pain, which actually proved reassuring. When waking up from surgery, she remembers thinking with relief, "Well, I can't be dead because I am in terrible pain." More important, she knew that her pain would diminish and that time she would be stronger, with the prospect of many vigorous years ahead. 5 common heart procedure: coronary heart or bypass grafting. Plaque that grows in the heart's arteries can prevent the organ from getting enough oxygen-rich blood. To fix the problem, a surgeon takes a healthy section or vein from an artery from your leg or chest wall and uses them to bypass blockages in up to 4 arteries. Percutaneous coronary intervention, PCI. Sometimes doctors use this less invasive procedure to treat blockages by inserting and inflating a tiny balloon in an artery, often popping it open with a stent. Aortic valve replacement, AVR. The aortic valve is designed to open up as the heart pumps, allowing blood out, and to close between beats, preventing blood from flowing back in. But some people are born with a faulty valve or develop one over time. Surgeons can repair a bad valve or replace it with a mechanical one or one made from human or animal tissue. When AVR is too risky, surgeons can perform transcatheter or aortic valve replacement, TAVR, a less invasive but less proven surgery that is performed through a catheter inserted in the leg or groin and threaded up to the heart. Aneurysm repair. When an artery wall weakens and begins to bulge, surgeons can patch or bypass the weakest part before it bursts. Arrhythmia treatment. Heart that beats too slowly, too quickly, or irregularly is sometimes controlled with one or two permanently implanted devices. A pacemaker uses electrical impulses to regulate the heartbeat. An implantable cardioverter defibrillator, ICD, shocks the heart when it detects a dangerous rhythm, replacing it, resyncing it. In rare cases, rhythm disorders must be corrected through an open-heart surgery known as a MAZE procedure, which routes the electrical pathways to the heart. I actually had the MAZE procedure. And here's a list of hospitals that don't share data. Of the more than 1,000 U.S. hospitals that do adult heart surgery, about 65% share their mortality and complication rates with Consumer Reports or the Society of Thoracic Surgeons, a professional group for heart surgeons. Last year, 30 large hospitals didn't share that data with CTR or STS. This year, 12 didn't. The Arkansas Heart Hospital in Little Rock, the Baptist Memorial Hospital in Tennessee, the Forest General Hospital in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, the Kansas Heart Hospital in Wichita, the Leesburg Regional Medical Center in Florida, the Methodist Hospital in San Antonio, the Mount Sinai Medical Center in Miami Beach, Florida, the New Hanover Regional Medical Center in Wilmington, North Carolina, the Ohio Health Riverside Methodist Hospital in Columbus, Ohio, Providence Sacred Heart Medical Center and Children's Hospital in Spokane, Washington, St. Francis Hospital Medical Center in Hartford, Connecticut, and St. Vincent's Medical Center in Riverside, Jacksonville, Florida. A few hospitals include Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles and New York Presbyterian Hospital in New York City allow STS to publish their heart data, but not Consumer Reports. You can look up their ratings at publicreporting.sts.org. Well, that kind of runs us out of time for today's broadcast of the Reader's Digest of Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time, where we'll start off the Consumer Reports with three questions to ask before you have heart surgery. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. We would like to thank all of our past sponsors for their generous contributions to the Reading Service. If you have any comments or questions or would like to be a sponsor, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and so long until next time, and thanks so very much for listening.